Hello, and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from The Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology. It's April 2022, and I'm Stephanie Becker. This month, I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Louise Bauer, Professor of Child and Adolescent Health at the University of Sydney, whose review on obesity in children and adolescents can be found online at thelancet.com. So can you tell us a bit about the burden of paediatric obesity across the world?
The prevalence of obesity in children and young people has really increased quite dramatically over the past few decades. If we think about 1975, then the prevalence of obesity in girls was about 0.7%, and for boys was about 0.9%, not very high. But if we think just a few years ago, in 2016, we're looking at prevalence rates of 5.6% in girls and 7.8% in boys. So this has been a really big rise. And of course, in a number of countries, it's far, far more prevalent. So we're looking at prevalence rates greater than 30%, so almost about one in three children and young people with obesity in many Pacific nations. And we have values greater than 20% in several countries in the Middle East, in North Africa, in parts of the Western Pacific, the Caribbean, as well as the USA. So it's a major, major issue in many countries. And it's not just in high-income countries, but in many small island developing states and low- and middle-income countries.
Yeah, really big issue then. So what would you say are the main causes and the factors that contribute to obesity?
There's a whole array of intricately connected factors. So first of all, you have to be biologically predisposed. We know there's a very strong genetic predisposition, one of the reasons it runs in families. But we also have a range of socioeconomic factors that can also influence that. And we have a range of environmental factors that have really made it difficult for those who are particularly biologically predisposed to stay in a healthy weight range. So it's almost like what we see is a physiological response to what I see as a pathological environment known as the 21st century. There's no one thing that's gone wrong, and so no one thing is going to fix it. And we see that the issues to do with sedentarism, the decrease in active transport, the rise of passive entertainment, huge changes in our food environments across many, many different parts of the world, the rise of food marketing, different types of food eaten now than a couple of generations ago, and also people living in stress and in high-income countries, those who are living in more social disadvantage, are particularly at risk. So it's a perfect storm of problems that have emerged.
And what are the different kind of options for management in children and adolescents?
I think one of the really important things in those who have obesity is the importance of actually being treated without stigma in the health system. So one of the really important things is to have good treatment from health professionals, whether it's a nurse, a doctor, an allied health professional, who treat people with respect and care for them and support them so that they feel that people have a sense of self-efficacy, that they feel they can come again, that they don't feel that they're being blamed for their illness. So I think that's really important. I think it's very important for health professionals to assess the whole child, the whole young person, take a good examination history to better understand what the aspects that are there that may be contributing to this young person's issue. In terms of treatment, we would strongly advocate a whole of family approach. So we don't just say, little Charlie over there's got to, you know, live this healthy lifestyle, but the rest of us ain't going to do it. It's a whole family issue. And as I've mentioned before, this runs in families, and we need broader family engagement to do this. We're not just talking about weight being the outcome. We're talking about having, you know, good nutritional intake, living a healthy, physically active life, all of those things that make for good general health. It's really important to take a developmentally sensitive approach. So the way that as a clinician I would treat a four-year-old is different from the way I would treat a 14-year-old. Yeah. And to be very sensitive to those issues. I think it's important that clinicians manage any obesity-associated complications to recognise them. So if this young person has prediabetes or obstructive sleep apnea or has hip or knee problems that haven't been addressed, then those definitely need to be treated. But then it's also important to address the issue to do with weight. If this young person is seeking treatment and the family too, then it's very important to do so in a very sensitive, helpful way. We would recommend that we have a whole of family approach. We would look at support for long-term behavioural change, and that deals with moving in terms of dietary intake, looking at sedentary behaviours and looking at opportunities for physical activity. And that underpins, that's for everybody, no matter the severity of disease. In adolescents and those who have more severe disease, then there are other treatment options such as more intensive dietary interventions, some pharmacotherapy, but although not as much available now as we would like, and also bariatric surgery in those with more severe disease. All of these are part of the suite of options that we would have. Just to really emphasise the importance of doing this in a collaborative fashion with the young person, the child and the family, and about having this non-stigmatising approach. What we want to do is to allow people to feel free to be able to come back again and to engage in treatment in a way that's going to support them. We don't want them feeling scarred by this interaction with the health system.
So what other sorts of barriers are there to obesity treatment, and what do we need to overcome those barriers?
In many, many parts of the world, one of the major barriers to obesity treatment is the very fact that there aren't many places where people who need treatment for obesity can actually get it in a publicly accessible and age-appropriate fashion. We know from a study of 68 countries that the World Obesity Federation did that in every country that was audited, surveyed, clinicians recognised that there were generally long waiting lists to access treatment, that there may not be health professionals who are well trained in management, that it might be expensive to access the treatment that's needed, and that they might experience stigma. This is well recognised, and I think many clinicians working in this area also have this sense of frustration. So that's one of the barriers. There are also barriers to do with individuals. For example, if the family live with social disadvantage, then it's important that clinicians be aware of the challenges that there may be and give advice that's appropriate to people who may be living in relative poverty in terms of food choices, opportunities for physical activity. If a young person, for example, has a developmental disability or other chronic disease, that needs to be taken into account in terms of the advice and treatment options given. If someone is having a significant family crisis or has psychiatric issues that are present, then those may well need to be treated and addressed before weight management can occur. But obesity itself, even if all those issues are fairly taken off the table, then there are barriers. You know, the young person may or may not want to be involved in treatment at that time. You need to be certain as a health professional that you're not treating yourself. I may be worried about this young person's liver function tests or their blood glucose, but they may be worried about something completely different. They may be worried, for example, about keeping up with their mates on the soccer field or being bullied at school. And it would be foolish of me to go down the path of, you know, this very medical model approach if I don't address the issues that are really important to that young person. So we need to see what are the factors for them that are important. So it may be addressing issues to do with bullying and self-esteem and giving support in that way. It may be in the case of a young person who wants to be fit to go on the soccer field, to actually think about whether you may need to involve, for example, an exercise scientist or actually use the concept of getting fit, match fit and improving fitness as the way in. The weight on the scales may be important to many of us, but it may not be the important thing for that young person. So we need to start with where they are. Young people may experience a range of other barriers. For example, if they've been stigmatised about their weight, then they may expect to be stigmatised again in the interactions with you, and hence the importance of being able to take an approach that stops that stigma. It means that the therapeutic interaction you have with them will be far better, and they'll be more likely to see that health professionals can help in the future as well. But of course, there will be barriers. Not everybody responds exactly the same way to the same form of therapy, and why we need to look forward in the future to more forms of personalised pathways in terms of obesity management. We're only at the very start of understanding what forms of treatment may best work for which people at which time. And we have a long way to go there.
You can read Professor Bauer's review online now at thelancet.com. Thank you to Professor Bauer, and thank you for listening to this episode of In Conversation With. Remember, you can subscribe to In Conversation With, The Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology, wherever you usually get your podcasts.